Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and today we're going to be talking about anger, how to resolve anger in the family. Parents have lots to feel upset about today with pressure from the economy, pressure from jobs, pressure from the normal responsibilities at home, which don't diminish with these other added pressures, and then extra pressure to have their children succeed because they're afraid that they might end up being unemployed, plus daily pressure from all the advertisers in our social environment to keep up with the competition. No wonder parents' patience can wear thin and anger begins to affect family relationships. Kids, too, can get angry. They feel pressure to achieve, feel the stresses of keeping up, buying the newest electronic game and so on, and they are getting less time and support from parents. My guest this week is Jules Shuzan Harris Sensei, a leader in the teaching of Zen Buddhism and the founder and vice abbot of the Soji Zen Center in Lansdowne, Pennsylvania. Buddhist philosophy has grown in popularity over the last 50 years, through my whole lifetime, pretty much, because of its unique approach to handling powerful emotions through methods to calm the mind and relieve our stress and give us peace and composure. And Shuzan will share some of those with us today. Dr. Harris received Shaiho, received Shaiho from Enkyo Roshi at the Wisdom House in Litchfield, Connecticut, and became her second Dharma successor. Shuzan is a member of the Zen Peacemakers Sangha, the Soto Zen Buddhist Association, and the American Zen Teachers Association. Dr. Harris is a Soto priest who has practiced Buddhism for more than 25 years. In August 2006, Shuzan received Hoshi from Enkyo Roshi at the Grail. In May 2002, he, as an assistant teacher at the Kanzan Zen Center in Salt Lake City, Utah, received the Denkai, which is the transmission of the precepts from Genpo Roshi, abbot of that center. Dr. Harris holds an doctorate in education with a concentration in applied human development and has practiced as a psychotherapist. And he's found creative ways to synthesize Western psychology and Zen to achieve dramatic results for patients and students. He also holds black belts in Aikido, I'm not pronouncing that right, the use of a samurai sword, and in Kendo, Japanese fencing. He founded two Japanese swordsmanship schools, one in Albany, New York, and one in Salt Lake City. And now with his center here in Lansdowne, apparently he's returned to his childhood area here in Pennsylvania. So welcome to Family First, Dr. Harris.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. I connected with you because I had started to get the newsletters from the Soji Zen Center, and they were very, very interesting. It's exciting to know there's a Zen Center near where I am here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And I also saw your recent article about anger, and that fascinated me because there's a lot of frustration and anger building up in families today. And since we're all about finding solutions for families, I'm very pleased to have you as a guest. How did you first get interested in writing about anger and dealing with it? I guess as a psychotherapist, you've run into it, I'm sure, in others. How did you first become interested in that issue particularly?
Well, I think you're right on target. As a psychotherapist, you're dealing with interpersonal conflict and couples, also internal conflict, people not being satisfied with with their lifestyle, and as I often tell some of my clients, others can't reject you unless you have first rejected aspects of yourself. So in rejecting aspects of yourself, of course, anger comes into play because there are parts of yourselves that you're disenchanted with. So I would say certainly psychotherapy, but prior to psychotherapy, just my own internal battle with anger. And as I've said in the article that I wrote, you have to look at anger also along with the notion of fear. I often say that on one side of the coin, you have anger. On the other side of the coin, you have fear. Show me an angry person, and I'm looking at someone who's afraid. So growing up in the kind of environment I grew up in, I spent a lot of time being afraid, which led me to study the martial arts. And, of course, you study something like the martial arts, you learn how to hurt people, and in doing so, you get to a space where, because you know 100 different ways in which to seriously injure someone, that you don't feel the need to do it. But that does not cause the anger to necessarily subside, because what you're doing is you take on a posture of arrogance, and which is another cover for anger too, in that you don't hurt people because you see yourself as superior, having the ability to hurt them. And eventually I ended up doing Iaido, which is the art of drawing and cutting with a samurai sword. It's non-combative, and it really leads you to challenge your internal conflict. See? So that's how I ended up with that particular non-combative martial arts, and then eventually on to Zen and the meditative practice.
So, that's a fascinating history. Thanks for sharing that. Many people think that if they get rid of their fear by learning how to defend and protect themselves, that will automatically allow them not to be afraid. But you're saying that doesn't go all the way. There's more to it. Of course, in the Karate Kid movie, we see the arrogance of some people who see uh-huh. themselves as invulnerable, but it doesn't necessarily grow their character so that they can be mentally invulnerable.
You bring up an interesting point. The kanji, which is the Japanese writing for martial arts. One of the interpretations, it means to be able to fit in any situation harmoniously, which is a interesting take. When we think of martial arts, we think of militancy, aggression, and what have you. But one way of writing it and interpreting it is to fit in any place or situation harmoniously. See? So, but unfortunately, we don't emphasize that aspect like anything in our culture today.
That's a shame, because that's a problem right now, that people are, their environments are shifting, and how to adjust to that in a healthy way could be
precisely.
Very helpful.
yeah, precisely. Yeah. So,
Dr. Harris, what would you say is the biggest problem facing families today as far as dealing with their anger?
Well, there's what I call the big three that's being threatened right now. And the big three are safety, security, and predictability. Mm. And given the status of our economy, I think those three things, which from a Buddhist perspective, by the way, are might be defined as delusion, because there's, from a Buddhist perspective, there's no such thing as safety, security, and predictability. What there is impermanence. And we delude ourselves by becoming attached to things that we think that will bring us safety, security, and predictability. And I say delude because we don't face the reality of impermanence. Everything is in a constant state of flux. And frankly, we as a society, as a culture, we have not been given the tools by and large to live a life of impermanence. I often say to students, you are afraid to die. And if you are afraid to die, then you are afraid to live. See, there again, we have impermanence. Do you follow me?
Yes, yes. It makes a lot of sense, because if you live in fear of dying, then it's very hard to focus on the living this moment.
Yeah, precisely. And the challenge, one of the things that I see is that we kind of operate from the illusion that things outside of ourselves cause our anger, cause our fear, cause our disenchantment with our lives. And even the way we structure, if you think about it, even the way we structure our language reinforces this illusion that something outside of us is hurting us. We say things like, he hurt my feelings, she made me feel bad. Even to the point that if you were walking down the street and some men made lewd comments about you, you could have them brought up on charges for sexual harassment because they made you feel uncomfortable. See, so I think it's important for us to challenge these kinds of illusions. And this is one of the things that happens in Zazen, which is Zazen is sitting meditation, is that you're sitting there and you're facing yourself. You're seeing how an illusion that things outside of yourself is what's creating the problem. And if you sit in Zazen long enough, you begin to see the mechanics of how you create your anger.
That's very interesting. Yeah, my son loved his karate. He went through to the black belt, and he says he was quite amazed that people didn't get it. Like what you mentioned about someone making a lewd comment when you walk by. He would tell his friends, you know, sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can't hurt you. And you know, we all learned that as kids, but we don't seem to apply it in our adult lives to to settle our emotions. So that makes sense that when you're just sitting with yourself, you realize these emotions come and go without any outside influence.
Right, right, precisely. And, you know, going back to anger being on one side of the coin and fear on the other side of the coin, often I will ask people when I'm working with them, when they're angry, I'll say to them, now ask yourself, what am I afraid of? And the fear usually is fear of non-existence, fear of unworthiness, fear that you are being viewed as damaged, as inadequate, as inferior, as not good enough. You see?
Yes.
And so that's what I attempt to get people to get in touch with. And then again, from a Buddhist perspective, who is it? The question, the next question becomes, who is it that is afraid? Who is it that is fearful? Do you see? And to really sit and investigate that. And of course, what we come up with are a bunch of ideas and concepts about who we think we are. And that's what we're really defending. We're really defending an idea of who we are. From a Buddhist perspective, we don't know who we are. Yes, there's the conventional self. You say, my name is Jewel Susan Harris, my name is Randy, etc. There's the conventional. But setting that aside, who is it that is afraid? You see? And I've yet to have anyone come up and identify that or it which is afraid.
Yeah, that's a very powerful question. Who is it that's afraid? Because it gets it right back to you. You know, what are you protecting? Your self-image. And we're coming up on a break, Jules, but I want to talk more about how parents might guide children to make this kind of stepping back and introspection, and also doing it themselves before they assume that their children are the ones that are making them feel uncomfortable with their anger. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about how to apply this in the family situations. Very powerful stuff. Thank you.
Okay.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're speaking with Jules Suzanne Harris, sensei in karate and a Soto priest. And he's also the founder and vice abbot of the Soji Zen Center in Lansdowne, Pennsylvania. And he's written a fascinating article about anger. And we've been talking about how to deal with anger in the family. And we've been discussing how anger, behind anger is usually fear, and if not always, and he was suggesting a wonderful strategy of saying, well, so what are we afraid of, and who is it that's feeling this fear, and that really turns that introspection back on the self, or what you perceive as yourself. And I wanted to ask you, Dr. Harris, about how people in a family context can, for themselves, when they think their children are making them angry, or their boss is making them angry, or the economy is making them angry, what kind of process can they work through for that, and also then sure. Talk about what they can teach their kids.
Okay. I was trained in a simple technique and called the identity system by Dr. Stan Block a number of years ago, back when I was living in Utah. And it's a simple exercise where, for instance, in the center of a sheet of paper, you would write, Randy hurt my feelings. You would write that statement in the center of the page, and you'd draw an oval around it. And then you'd spend the next 3 or 4 minutes generating thoughts that are associated with that initial thought. And once you did that, then you would scan your body, and you would locate tension. You would identify whether your body felt heavy or light, whether your breathing was shallow or deep, etc. Now, what this does is it draws your attention to the connection between thought and its impact on your body. What you would discover with this increased tension is that your blood pressure would be elevated, and of course that causes the white blood cell count to go down. So the long and short of it is you're actually generating damage yourself with the thoughts. Now, what causes that? What triggers that is simply our requirement that people have to be a certain way in order for us to feel comfortable. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a requirement. Requirement, obvious requirement is my son or Randy or whoever should not upset me. We have a requirement that they should be sensitive and caring. Now, what does that stem from? Goes right back to something I said earlier, and that is a core belief that I am damaged. When we think we are damaged, we want the world and everyone in it to take care of us. Okay? Am I being clear?
Yes, that's very powerful. What was it? Tell me the name of that technique again.
The name of what, dear?
The technique of drawing on a paper what's going on for you, and
okay,
then.
Okay, that's called mind mapping. It provides you with a snapshot of what's on your mind, and I discussed that a bit in the article that you referenced earlier. So it's one of the major techniques that I use in working with people. Again, it goes back to core belief on damage, but it also, you can see how it's connected to safety, security, and predictability. Do you see?
Yes, yeah. One of the things that I try to teach in my parenting is that that you're okay, you know, that as a parent you are okay, and this fits so
right.
Well with the idea that you get angry because you think you've been damaged, or you are already damaged and you're on the defensive. That makes so
right.
much sense.
Right, precisely. See, we're always looking at ourselves in relationship to an other. Do you see?
Mm-hmm.
We define ourselves based on the relationship between self and other. Am I good? Am I bad? Am I smart? Am I dumb? Etc.
I think one of the most slippery slopes that parents face is when they are comparing themselves with other parents, or
yes.
comparing their children to other children, and there's a competitiveness, but it actually is I think it does come from fear that somehow there's an inadequacy in you and your child, instead of realizing, mm-hmm. okay, they're different, that's okay. Instead, they compare and contrast and compete.
Yes, yes, and we give double messages. We tell people to cooperate, and then we tell them to compete. How do you do? That's like a double bind. How do you do both?
Right, right. Now, certainly we are all in relationship with others. So what would be a better way to think about those relationships? If someone says, oh, your kid's too active, or your kid's not smart, or, what's a better way to think of our relationships with others and with our children and our parents?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, I think the little simple exercise that I gave you, that something like learning to diffuse your requirement. Johnny should be a certain way. Okay, that's a requirement. And as you just pointed out, Johnny's just different. And that's okay. So once you see what your requirement is, that what you're really doing is wanting situations and or people to be a certain way in order for you to feel comfortable. Once you see that's simply a requirement, and you really don't need that requirement to be fulfilled in order for you to feel comfortable. Just the bare recognition that, you know, something as simple as you have a beautiful outfit you want to wear out today. You look outside and it's storming and you get upset. Gee, why did it have to rain today? I really wanted to show off this outfit. It sounds silly, but yet that can disturb you because your requirement is that the sun has to be shining so that you can wear your nice outfit. So recognizing that, oh, that's a requirement, that in itself will diffuse, can help to diffuse the anger. So the other thing is being able to identify the hurt. Usually when someone's angry and I'm working with them, I'm looking at what they're experiencing, the hurt, the sadness, the fear that's underlying the anger. And that's what I identify with.
So you're helping them look at, you know, where do they think they are hurt or damaged, and
mm-hmm.
what requirement was that based on?
Yeah, because what's happening is they're covering up. Anger is a very powerful emotion, and it can be used as a defense against feelings of vulnerability. You see, no one wants to. It's easy for us to become angry. No one wants to say, I really feel hurt. I really feel scared. I really feel vulnerable. I feel lost. See?
Is that another fear that they think that if they admit to vulnerability that they will be hurt more?
Yes. 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 It's amazing how guarded people are. You work with couples, and I, you know, I said, okay, so you have a wall out here. Certain friends are allowed up to this wall. You're in an intimate relationship, but you still have a wall up. Do you see?
Yes.
And people that readily admit to me, well, if I really let her know how afraid I am, then she or he will take advantage of me.
Oh, that's a sad way to be in an intimate relationship.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, point of fact, then you're not, how the heck are you going to be intimate with someone when clearly what I just described is a lack of intimacy with oneself?
So, can you expand on that some, that the intimacy with yourself, so you don't know how to feel comfortable other than how you're reflected from other people?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, intimacy with oneself is the acceptance of what I call, barring from the spaghetti western, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's the acceptance of that's what to be human. That's the human condition, the good, the bad, the ugly, see? And really, that's what you're working for when you're doing therapy with someone, is you're helping them integrate all of these various parts of themselves and to accept them, you see?
And once they have done that, then it's easier for them to be comfortable no matter what other people are doing.
Right, precisely. And if they're comfortable, with themselves, then it's easier to be comfortable with other people. You know, typically, think about it. People that we can't stand, we have certain people in our company that we can't stand. I mean, classical example of projection. You're projecting onto the person parts that you of yourself that you're disowning. Once you reclaim, oh, I can't stand so-and-so because he's so stingy. He's so self-centered. He's so egotistical. Once you reclaim those parts of yourself that you're rejecting, then, of course, you can be more accepting.
You can have some compassion for that person that they have have indulged that part of themselves more than you have, perhaps, but it's still there in everybody.
Yeah. And as the Dalai Lama says, that everyone on the planet at one time was a mother. So if you see everyone, men and women, young people, old people, as having been a mother, that fosters compassion too.
Yes, for sure. I've often said that, you know, if you really hate something, it's because you're afraid of that characteristic in yourself.
Right, precisely.
So how, Sensei, would you help parents help their children deal with the anger? Because on the break we were talking about there's a real pressure for kids to react emotionally to every word on the Facebook, for instance, to have these automatic emotional responses, and that kind of fans the flame of jealousy and competition. How can a parent kind of break that cycle?
Yeah. Well, I think, as I said earlier, at the risk of being a bit redundant, I think it's a matter of looking at what's the vulnerable feelings. I mean, if you're talking about Facebook, you're talking a lot about teenagers. Their developmental issue, of course, is got to do with who am I, defining that self. So that's a real challenge. I like the exercise that I shared with you earlier, the mind mapping. I've done that with, I've done it with teenagers. I've done it with adults. I've done it with kids as young as 11 and 12. And I found it to be an effective tool in helping them to see how they are creating their distress.
Yeah, I think they could even do that with drawing rather than writing, and just getting in touch with what's going on in their bodies. It's a very powerful thing. It's neat that it's worked with teens.
You can do it with certainly with drawings, but usually people have an internal dialogue. They have cognitive messages that reinforce their distress. Shadow beliefs like I'm damaged, I'm inadequate, I'm a doormat, I don't matter. Those shadow beliefs are usually embedded in their narrative, which of course is the story that people tell themselves and that they live by.
Now, that's an important thing to have parents realize, that a lot of those that internal dialogue comes from parental comments that the parents may think are just casual, like, well, you're like a bull in the china shop. Right. And I've heard parents say that to their kids in a store. And but that child's going to hear that the rest of their lives unless they are able to get behind it and let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Parents can go a long way to avoiding laying down some of that self-talk. Is that mm-hmm. not true?
Yeah, I think you're making a case for mindfulness, that there's a need for parents to become more mindful, more aware of the impact that what they say to their kids has on the kids, that they want to be, because parents are, well, they're human, they can be sarcastic, and as I said in the article that I referenced earlier, if you look at our humor and our culture, it's full of anger. It's usually at the expense of another person or persons. You know, someone's being damaged, someone's being put down, etc. So, and I think that parents often just don't think, or they're thinking, but then they're not looking at. Aristotle defined communication as the art of persuasion. He said, you communicate with people because you want something. So when you're communicating, the question becomes, what is the intent? What is it that I want here? If it is, I want what I think is the best for my child, then how do you communicate that in a way in which the child hears it? You see?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We're up on our second break here, Dr. Harris, but when we come back from the break, I want to talk more about how parents can develop this mindfulness. Even when there's stress around them, they can do it for themselves and then for their children. So when we come back from the break, I'd love to talk more about that. Thank you.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're talking with Jules Schussen Harris, who's a psychotherapist and also a Zoto priest in Zen Buddhism, and is the founder and vice abbot of the Soji Zen Center in Lansdowne, Pennsylvania. And we're talking about the topic of anger and how anger really is a very strong emotion that hides fear, and the way we can overcome it is to ask ourselves, you know, where is this coming from? And he's shared some wonderful insights about how in families the parents can find ways to reduce their own anger and also model for the children how to reduce it. And you've shared mind mapping, which is a wonderful technique anybody of any age can use to get in touch with what's going on in their bodies when they think that they're angry because somebody else is doing something. So I really love those insights. And you were just saying before the break, Jules, about the that when we communicate with someone, we're looking for them to do something different or to be different, and that those requirements can get mm-hmm. us angry if we think they're mm-hmm. not going to be who we think they should be.
Right, precisely. So, as I said earlier, being able to see what one, identify one's requirements is enough to diffuse the requirement, to understand that you do not need for people to be a certain way in order for you to feel okay. And that in itself can be incredibly empowering. So going back to working with kids, helping kids see that where one of their main issues as teens is identifying who they are, coming to terms with becoming a self, that technique can be very empowering because it places them in charge. They begin to see, look, I'm responsible for upsetting myself. It's not that Joey, who doesn't like me, is causing my upsetness, but it's my requirement that in order for me to feel okay, I need Joey to like me. Do you see?
Yes, it reminds me of what Abe Lincoln said, that people are just about as happy as they decide they want to be.
Yes.
That it's an internal process of whether you're comfortable or not. It's so powerful. So parents, if they can see that in themselves, they can help their kids see that. And mm-hmm. and so the discipline, one of the things my son liked best about the karate training was the discipline and the ability mm-hmm. to be present and composed and at peace no matter what is going on around you. And mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing that you teach at your center, is it?
Yeah, we teach that. And mindfulness practice, it's something that a family can do as a unit after dinner in the evening. You could sit mindfully as a family unit for 10 minutes. Parents, usually when we teach people how we teach mindfulness practice, we recommend that folks do it the first thing in the morning. Maybe they sit for 10 minutes daily for several weeks until they eventually get up to 20 minutes. Usually 20 minutes is required to reap real benefit from mindfulness practice. And so you can have parents sitting 20 minutes in the morning and then 10 minutes with their kids in the evening. And then eventually parents may end up sitting 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes as well in the evening. And neuroscience is showing, I mean, it's just incredible the wealth of information that we're gleaning from the neurosciences. They're showing now how what we think affects every cell in our body, how the connection between what we think and how it impacts the environment, how negative thoughts can create a toxic environment so that whenever we're exposed to that environment, we end up experiencing ourselves as damaged. So clearly, you know, this whole Buddhist notion of everything in the universe is interconnected is being put forth now by neuroscientists. Do you see?
Yes, I just think that's such a fascinating area of modern science, and it's delightful that some of the more ancient civilizations figured these things out and figured out applications before we had the scientific kind of investigation to look into every cell. But they intuited through through centuries of observation that these things were so. It's really brilliant. And I'm thinking, when if the family's sitting for 10 to 20 minutes mindfully as a group, that's much better than, like you mentioned, the some of the sitcoms that kids see on TV. All the humor is about put downs, making people uncomfortable, sarcasm. And it makes so much sense for parents to be more mindful about what they expose their small children, especially to on the media, and having these times to counteract some of that. And have you found that you have to sometimes wean families away from that constant bickering and sarcasm?
Right, because what you're making a case for are what's called triggers. There are certain things that one partner will say that just automatically triggers a reaction with another in the other partner. So when you're working with people, then one of the things you make them aware of are the triggers. And you look at the nonverbal communication as well. Have you noticed it's virtually impossible to have an argument with someone if you're sitting next to them on the couch? It's a lot easier to argue if you're sitting across from them. You ever notice that?
Yes, and why is that? Why
because
is
it's
that?
It's non-combative. So you're sitting next to a person, and wherein I often thought it'd be great if our leaders, our world leaders, sat next to each other as opposed to cross the table from each other when they're negotiating treaties and all kinds of policy issues.
So they could sit on the same side of the booth in the restaurant and solve the world's problems a little better.
Yeah. So that's one of the, you want to make people aware. Now, having said all of this, let me just say this. From one perspective, we have come on this planet fully equipped. We have the ability to work through whatever issues come up. All we have to do is clear our minds, create a space where we then can address whatever issues that come up. We don't need a game plan. Do you see?
Yes.
If we're really doing our mindfulness practice, out of that experience will come the activity that we need to engage in order to address the problem.
See? So you're saying that children come into this world with those kinds of mindful skills, but they may need some techniques later on if they have not kept it up.
Yeah.
We just have a few more minutes, but I wanted to talk a little bit about how kids catch on very quickly to what a parent's triggers are, and they can press buttons very easily. And the parents need to learn how not to let that happen and to deactivate those buttons.
Mm-hmm.
So the triggers, those triggers work in the parent-child relationship too. So How can a parent do that? Just deactivate their own buttons and their children know what the triggers
okay.
are. They know
well,
if they do that ostentatious look, the parent's going to react.
Right. They could do a mind map. If they know what the trigger is, they could write the trigger in the center of the page and then generate thoughts around that initial trigger and then scan their bodies. And then they would identify their requirements, their rules governing how their kids should be in order for them to feel okay. And once they see that they have these rules, these requirements, that in itself becomes a way of diffusing the power that the trigger has on them. Do you follow me?
Yeah, what a powerful technique, and I hope the listeners can really put that to use. So in the remaining minutes, I want to make sure people can get in touch with you. Where can they find the article on anger, Dr. Harris?
That's in the latest edition of the Tricycle magazine. It's an international Buddhist magazine. It just came out a couple of weeks ago.
Your website for the center, the Soji Zen Center in Lansdowne, what is the website for that?
That's www.sojizencenter, all one word, .com.
That's S-O-J-I-Z-E-N-C-E-N-T-R.
S-O-J-I-Z-E-N-Center.com. It's all one word.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on Family First. You've offered some fabulous techniques for parents to deal with their own anger and their kids' anger and the triggers that their kids come up with to maybe manipulate them a little bit, and all the wisdom that you've brought to it from Buddhism and from martial arts and from psychotherapy. Thank you so much for bringing all that together for us, Dr.
Thank you very much for having me as your guest.
My pleasure.
And you take care.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.